There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Well, what a wild and wacky night we just witnessed.
That was the best basketball day in a long, long, long time.
There's been a lot of nights like this, though. It's been like a pretty good season to just pay a lot of attention to the NBA. And, you know, the yoke I keep making is, oh man, like, there's just no parity in the league. You know, the Warriors, it's just so boring. Dion Waiters, man.
Yeah, and that's right.
Is that the shot of the night? There's so many shots of the night, but is that the shot of the night?
There's literally no doubt. And like you said, there's been nights like this, but there also haven't been any nights like this. You know what I mean? Like,
and what a night to be recording.
Yeah, we were complaining about picking tonight versus a couple of other nights. We were so right about it.
Yeah, so it is the perfect night, truly, to record.
Insert Dion Waiters meme.
Another episode of Almighty Ballin', but hey, it's not just any Almighty Ballin', it's Unguarded Shooting. That's when you can't do that. That's a True Hoop thing.
Lots of people do that. It's a Hawks thing.
Oh. Well, we're not talking about the Hawks. Well, actually, we are, sort of.
We are going to talk about the Hawks.
At first, we were going to cover three games. We were going to cover Hawks, Clippers, and then move on to
Rockets, Bucks.
Right, Rockets, Bucks, and then Jazz, Thunder, but then the Cavs went and lost to the Pelicans, and the Warriors went and lost to the Heat. So we're just going to cover just sort of everything. You know, I feel like it's one of those nights to just sort of just touch on all the shenanigans that happened.
All right, well, where do you want to start? Ooh, actually, take it back. I'll decide. We'll start with the New Orleans game. Because, hat tip to a friend of the show, Mason Ginsburg.
Verified Mason Ginsburg.
Sorry, tip of the hat to friend of the show, verified Mason Ginsburg. As per his Twitter, I just recently learned that LeBron hasn't won in New Orleans since before he left Miami.
Wow. Really? Why?
Yeah, I don't know, but check Mason's Twitter.
So Anthony Davis is winning. Anthony Davis is truly the best... is the better of the two players. So, okay, well, did you know that the Cavs came back within 2 points? It was 122-124.
I did know that.
Yeah, led by a ferocious Kyrie Irving comeback. Kyrie Irving dropped to 49. The craziest thing about that game was that Kyrie Irving had 49 points, and LeBron played, and Kevin Love played, and they had one of those nights where everyone was sort of playing well. You know how... God, okay. LeBron had a triple double. Kevin Love had 22, all right, 16 and 6 assists, all right? Kyrie Irving had 49 points.
They couldn't beat the Pelicans with no Anthony Davis. Amazing.
Yeah. No, jeez, Louise. So I really liked going into the season Terrence Jones.
Yes, you know? You did.
Yeah. And you know, to be fair, it's not like he goes and drops 36 on the defending champs every night. And also, to be fair, it's January. The Cavaliers have a propensity to drop games like this. Even the Warriors have a propensity to drop games like this.
Oh, boy! But do they?
I mean, the fact that both of these games were, like, down to the wire, and it's just like, are you not even going to show up in the last couple of minutes? That's weird, you know?
Well, fun fact about the Warriors. So I had a Pelicans fun fact, Warriors fun fact. The Warriors are 3-4 in games within 5 points going into the last, I think, 3 minutes of the fourth quarter.
I'm sure it's fine. Just don't worry about it. I'm sure it's totally cool.
I'm not as sure. I'm not...
Your microphone's not quite right. You gotta have it, like, pointed at you like this.
I'm not unsure. Sure. Microphone brand.
It's great microphone.
That's a plug.
I let him use...
Yeah, I'm on the nice mic tonight, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm using it wrong. Welcome to our podcast. I'm using the purple
Nintendo 64 controller. You have the gray one.
Yeah, I have this sick gray controller, and I'm doing it bad. But yeah, so they're 3-4 in, I guess, like, close games as quantified by, like, the higher-ups.
Yeah, I think it's within 5 with 5 minutes left.
Yeah, and they're 3-4. That's pretty garbage.
Meanwhile, the Memphis Grizzlies, last time I checked, were... There was a while that they were 12-1, and now I think they're 13-3. Think
outrageous. And the
what a time to be alive, truly.
And it's like, okay, so I have some theories on why the Warriors aren't winning close games.
Well, so are we gonna move on to that, or
I mean what else do you have to say about the Pelicans game? Because I didn't mean to jump ahead, but I had a fun fact and I was excited about it.
I mean, so which game is worse to have dropped, like against the Pelicans with no AD? But the thing is about the Heat, though, no Justice Winslow, Hassan Whiteside had a really great game where he dominated the boards, ended up having a positive differential, but was like 5 of 14, you know? It's just like Deion Waiters went off. Which is worse? Like, who's more embarrassed?
I'm going to say the Warriors.
Because it's a trend.
Yes, okay. Exactly. The Warriors, because it's a trend. Because, like, it just sort of feels, and again, this is strictly conjecture, because that's all I know how to do. But it feels like they just sort of like fall into sort of ISO-y mode in a very thundery way towards the end of games. Which is
they're definitely figuring out their command structure. You know what I mean? We were talking about this. So Kevin Durant, right, went to a 73-win team and became the best offensive and defensive player on that team. And I'm not sure if that's true, but, I mean, certainly as of late, I think, you know, Kevin Durant has probably had a bigger defensive impact than Draymond, and all year long, he's probably had a bigger offensive impact than Steph. So, like, how is he not the guy who takes the final shot? But it's like he shouldn't be, though, you know?
Well, I mean, it's yes and no, right? It's that maybe Durant taking the final shot is their best option, but they have so many good options that their final play should never be, like, get the ball to this guy. It should be just move the ball and whoever's got to take it, because every single person on the team, or 4 out of the 5 people who are playing at the end of the game, can hit from basically anywhere.
Yeah, I'm sort of in favor of Steph Curry taking the shot, sort of because I want Kevin Durant and Draymond crashing the boards. And it's just like, you know, if it's down to, you know, creating a closeout and creating a mismatch, it's just like, you know, Steph was the closer on a 73-win team. You know what I mean? Like, I think that pretty definitively, to me anyways, it should be Steph. But I understand why there's some confusion, honestly.
Well, I just think, like, I think that there's yards for Steph, there's yards for Kevin Durant. But I think the best argument is that it just needs to be they just play less egalitarian in close games than they do in blowouts. And the reason they're in so many blowouts is because when they play egalitarian, they're basically impossible to stop. And then when they do get stopped, they stop playing their game, which is sort of a classic basketball thing, but it really, you know, gums their stuff up, because what makes them great is that they're unguardable precisely because teams have to defend every single player, every single second of every single possession. And they let them stop doing that, it makes them less awesome.
Well, and, you know, we were talking about this a little bit when we were watching a different game, and I think over the course of the entire night, this was sort of relevant. We were talking about sort of the difference between finesse and strength. It's like, you know, there's something to be said for just having, like, boom, tank, like, you're done. And just the other day, Kevin Durant tanked Aaron Gordon, but Aaron Gordon, I think, is a sophomore. If he's not a sophomore, he's a junior. So, I mean, I don't think that there is a question that, you know, the Golden State Warriors are a finesse team. And so when it gets down to, like, the last moment, it's like, you know, LeBron James is a battering ram.
Ding!
Can you hit mute? Thanks. When it gets to the last moment, LeBron James is a battering ram. And in a sense, Kyrie is a battering ram too. I mean, like, he is a finesse player, but he's not finesse in the way that the Warriors are finesse. He's not, like, you know, beautiful game type thing.
Well, sometimes he is, but he's got a little more flexibility. Like, he's better through contact, I think, than at least Steph.
I just mean in terms of, like, passing the ball and running a system. And
yeah, no, for sure. He's way more sort of old school in that respect. I also just think that, like, when you think about the Warriors, you just think about this, like, ball zips around, hit a corner three, everyone and the other team is sad now. And you just don't see that at the end of their games, and then they lose. And it's like, dog, dudes, like, let's get it together here.
Yeah, you know, I have another concern that I don't know. I'm not sure how real this is, partially because I think that some of their late game schemes and strategies they're intentionally not using yet. You know, it's interesting. I always thought, and I think everyone sort of thought in the back of their head, like, why aren't they running high pick and rolls with Kevin Durant and Steph? But it turns out that Kevin Durant is terrible at setting picks. That still might be the secret weapon, but I just, you know, I'm not certain that it's just like, oh, we flubbed up. I think it might be that, like, they're just not running what they would run in the clutch intentionally. It's quite possible. I mean, Steve Kerr comes from,
I mean,
you know, that school of thought, you know?
Yeah, we've definitely talked this before. You've definitely theorized this before that, that they're, you know, holding some stuff back for the postseason. And I don't think that that's an inconceivable possibility, but it just feels sort of dumb.
Why?
Well, it feels dumb to not run it at all at game speed. Like, to not build their offense around it and to keep their back pocket is one thing, but, like, they never do it.
Well, okay, so here's my thinking, right? I mean, they could, in practice, be this runs. I mean, there's so many players on this team that make, like, perfectly timed passes, and there's so much space to operate. Like, I feel like there's certain movements and, like, certain plays that they could be executing that are super wonky, especially, like, out of timeouts, like, sideline plays that could just be crazy because of all the three-point shooting they have. And it's like, you could open these giant fissures in defenses by just, like, are you eating tacos right now?
No, I'm just preparing tacos.
We're recording a... Why are you doing this?
I'm going to be very quiet. I'm just preparing these tacos. You won't even notice.
Man.
I'm literally spicing it up.
But why now, though?
Because I realized that I forgot to before. It's chilled. Don't even worry about it.
So you're making the argument that the Warriors should spice it up during the regular season.
Right. Like, it's that, like, you see this with players a lot, right? Like, you'll see, like, XYZ old dude signs with team, concerns about whether or not they're going to be in playing shape. Then they're like, don't worry, we have a whole offseason to practice and stuff. They get into the season, they're not in playing shape. They play for 2 months, and they get into playing shape. Right? They play themselves into shape. And I think that there's a certain extent to which the Warriors need to play themselves into shape for these late game situations by, like, running the stuff they would run in those situations, especially in the playoffs during the regular season. It doesn't have to be every single game, it doesn't have to be every single possession, but every once in a while, so that when they do it at the end of the season, or the postseason rather, they can win those games.
Well, so
and they can execute that stuff well.
I think that the truth is somewhere in the middle. I think that, you know, they got smoked last year in the finals, late down the stretch, because they went up against a team with maybe the two best players in the league who are good at offensively exploiting mismatches, right? LeBron and Kyrie will just go one-on-one with someone who can't deal with them, right? It's like, we're going to pick on Steph, and that's what we're going to do. And I feel like it's not like, you know, Steve Kerr was like, hey, miss this, screw up this play against Zach Randolph. Like, just do that for me. You know, like, It's not like they were like, hey, just let Deion Waiters just nail this in your face. I think it's a bit of both. I just think that, like, Steve Kerr has some tricks up his sleeves to compensate for the fact that, yes, I mean, the Warriors are struggling in a real way in the clutch. I just, you know, it could quite possibly be. I feel like clutch situations, especially for a team as good as the Warriors, are few and far in between. So it's a small sample size. So it's just like, you know, it's possible that they could have just gotten really unlucky, you know.
I mean, I definitely got really unlucky in the sense that Deion Waiters hit a pull-up three from, like, 28 feet in Klay Thompson's mouth.
Right.
And, like, you're not going to see that most of the time.
Are you, though?
I mean, maybe you will. Maybe Deion Waiters is our new Pope. But I just felt, I just think that, like, if
there might be a concern,
and if it is that they're holding stuff back, I think that speaks to a certain type of arrogance that people have sort of associated with the Warriors as problematic. And I think it would be a bit of a problem if they're like, "Don't worry, we've got all these tricks up our sleeve. We don't need to practice them at game speed."
Well, no. Okay, so what I'm saying, right, is that, like, they want to be what the Cavs are, which is, look, we're going to nail something in your face because, end of the day, Kevin Durant will smoke Zach Randolph, right? In the same way that it's like, you know what, man? Like, we'll take it. Kyrie Irving over Steph Curry, right? Mano a mano, we'll beat you. But they just have not done it. I mean, it's like, you know, but Klay Thompson, one of the best, you know, shooting guard defenders in the league, you know, toe-to-toe, Deion Waiters right now, boom, smoked. Fold the arms.
Right, but that's the thing, is that, like, okay, so the Cavs are like that because the Cavs need to be like that. That's their best option. The Warriors don't need to be like that, though. The Warriors have the capacity to create much easier shots on almost any possession because they have so much god dang talent.
Yeah, but
and so much passing ability. And it seems like the fact they're not taking advantage of that in the clutch, even if it is, like you're saying, somewhat of, like, an organizational decision, seems immensely foolish to me.
But that's how you get turnovers, you know? I think in the clutch, you really don't want to have all this ball movement and stuff because it's like the margin for error is so small because everyone's shooting the gaps. Like, you know, actually, we saw this in the Rockets game, right? Down late with the Bucks. They were making a bunch of passes that maybe would have maybe the Bucks would have let it fly in the second or first quarter. But down late, I mean, Jason Terry was, like, hitting passing lanes, and Giannis was just picking people off from behind. And it's just, like, in clutch, I feel like ball movement is a scary thing because you get into situations like, and, you know, also Steph Curry shouldn't be doing behind-the-back passes, but it's sort of the same principle where it's, like, you might just, like, screw it up, right?
I mean, I understand that, right? Like, that makes sense to me. But, like, so imagine, you know that scene in Indiana Jones where he brings the gun to the knife fight and the guy has the sword and he's sword dancing and he just shoots him in the face?
Yeah. Do you know the story behind that?
No.
So Indiana Jones had dysentery and he really needed to go and end the scene. It was supposed to be this whole fight, but he just was like, boom, like, I need to go poop.
Nice. Well, okay. So imagine that scene, but the guy's like, I got my sword, and he pulls out a gun, and then he's like, you know what, actually, forget this gun. And then he gets sworded to death. Right, it's like the Warriors have this like, even if you're right, there's like a certain degree of risk associated with it. The Warriors' ball movement is like the most powerful weapon in the NBA. Well, right, and it's like turning off that weapon and choosing not to use it in moments where you need to get points, even if it's a risky maneuver to use it, it seems like a riskier maneuver not to.
Dude, Steph Curry last year was a final 24 seconds cheat code, man. Like, just pulling up from three, just hitting ridiculous shots, like. There was nothing you wanted more than just Steph Curry, ball in his hands, don't pass it, just nail something.
Okay, but then do that ish this year, but he's not doing that ish this year. Like, we're not seeing it.
Yeah, they're trying to figure out their stuff. I mean, it's, you know, my biggest concern, and what I've been trying to express that I feel like I haven't yet, and then we should maybe move on after you respond to this. But what I've been trying to say is, like, it's not that I think they're, oh God, Jason Whitlock, it's not that we should turn off the TVs. So it's not that I'm saying that they have tricks up their sleeves and, like, that's something that they're happy about. I'm saying that, like, you know, they probably have stuff that they can try since the obvious answer isn't working. And it's like, the fact that you have to resort from that is not like, hey, you know, we can run a play and beat you instead of having our superstar nail you. Like, I sincerely think that Steve Kerr wishes that Steph Curry was the most elite off-the-dribble three-point shooter of all time this year, but he's not. And then Kevin Durant gets the heebie-jeebies, and Draymond is kicking people in the nuts or something.
Kevin Durant's heebie-jeebies are so inscrutable to me, because there are some games where it's like he doesn't even like feel it at all, and he's just like destroys everything no matter what's going on and who's defending him, like even like last year against the Spurs and stuff. And then there's sometimes where he's just like, fourth quarter! And it's weird. It's confusing. Well, I think...
So it might just be random.
I mean, to some degree it is. And I think... I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think that that's probably closer to the truth. It's just like... It just seems to me as though...
They blew a 3-1 lead.
They blew a 3-1 lead. They let Dion Waiters sink their boat in Miami and let them in Biscayne Bay. Like... Is that how you say it? I don't know. Whatever that
Biscuit is Bay?
Not Biscuit Bay. Biscayne, whatever. That bay that's associated with Miami.
Oh, you mean... oh, crap. I forgot her name. The woman who married Gabrielle Union. It's like Bay, like B-A-E. She's married to...
Dwayne Wade. No, I understand. I'm just confused about the joke. Anyways. What I mean to say is that, like, They lose these games, right? And they lose these clutch situations, and it feels to me like there are tactical... Okay, here's the way to put it. The Warriors have more answers to basketball questions than any other team in the NBA. As far as, like, options and ways to approach basketball problems. And the fact that they're not deploying that possibility, especially the coaching staff that we've seen be as outrageously creative as their coaching staff has been, is... weird to me. And there might have something to do with holding stuff back to the playoffs. It might have something to do with like individual skills and how they mesh. It might have something to do with wanting to be able to go ISO at certain times and get people used to that. But all in all, they're 3-4 in clutch game situations, and that's no good.
So what do you think happened late to the Rockets? Because like it looked a lot like the Rockets last year. They just like gave up.
They gave up. I mean, I think that... So, I mean,
it's like they gave up in the face of an unstoppable force. Don't get me wrong. It's not like they, like, you know,
rolled over?
Yeah, it's not like they rolled over against, like, the Nets or something. It was against Giannis going ham, Jabari having a great game, the Bucks.
Jason Terry showing up out of nowhere and nailing some big shots.
Yeah.
Greg Monroe having a good game.
Greg Monroe's having a sneaky good season.
Yeah, that is very true.
You know, rookie man...
Brogdon.
Right, Brogdon. He's had a great career outside of The Office.
Yeah, for all sure. Right.
Anyways, but... No, I mean, he and Greg Monroe have had the synergy. Like, I mean, Greg Monroe is once again the best center on the Bucks. I mean, Plumlee, who started, was like a minus 500.
Yeah, Plumlee's... I mean, he's a Plumlee.
Well, speaking of players who are minus way too much, Corey Brewer in 7 minutes was a minus 22.
That's so crazy.
Every time I think that he's been the worst that he could possibly be, he manages to be worse
than that. But never forget that Corey Brewer once scored 51 points in a game.
Yeah.
I
mean, whatever, man.
That literally happened. But to get back to the actual question you asked, I think we saw what happened to the Rockets in the fourth quarter, in the first quarter too.
Was that a back-to-back game? I mean, like, but that's not an excuse.
It was back-to-backs, but we saw the same thing in the Golden State games, so we were talking about a lot during the game.
Is everyone just lazy now? Because it's January, it's like, whatever.
No, I really think that when the Rockets aren't getting easy threes, they get frustrated. And they start forcing stuff. When forcing stuff doesn't work, which it never does against good defenses, which it has to be a good defense to stop the Rockets from getting easy threes, they just sort of like are like, well, I guess we're dead now. And we saw it in the Warriors game last week. And we saw it tonight. And we've seen it in past seasons and this season. Like, they lose faith in themselves when they're not getting the shots that they want, and good Not just good. It's more specific than good. It's fast, rangy, long defenses. Excuse me. Give them a ton of trouble as far as getting to their spots and getting the shots that they want. And when that happens, they sort of like just start just jacking stuff from anywhere. And I understand that the Rockets, to some degree, are like intentionally shooting 30-footers to open up the courts like that. And like D'Antoni talks about it, and that's fine. But those shots work effectively when they're also getting easy threes to complement them. And those shots work primarily because they help open up easy threes, is the bigger impact they have, even than being made by themselves. When they're not getting those easy threes, it just sort of all becomes a much trickier game for them. And their talent level and their ability sort of shows through in a certain kind of way when they're still hanging close to the Bucks for most of the game, they're still close to the Warriors for most, or close adjacent to the Warriors for most of the game.
It was not close in the fourth quarter, though.
No, it during stopped being close.
During the last 8 minutes, it's like, you know, there was the Jason Terry three, and then the Jason Terry pick, and then the transition pass to Greg Monroe, and then it was over.
Yeah, I mean,
it was really troubling to me.
They were demoralized. And this is what I was saying. When the beginning of this game, you were like, I think they're always going to be really well in the playoffs. And I was like, I don't think so. Because teams with the defense, play defense like the Bucks, like, will get inside their mind brain and chew it apart.
Well,
like that one monster from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Okay, well, and while you were saying this, while you were saying all of that, I wasn't disagreeing with you, though, right? It's like the point I was making is just that, well, yeah, the Rockets don't want to take difficult threes, but sometimes they will begrudgingly take them and make them anyways, because Eric Gordon, James Harden, Ryan Anderson, even to a lesser extent, Trevor Ariza are just, you know, killers.
Right, where I did a bad job of explaining then, that I will do a better job of explaining now, is that the impact of them making those hard threes isn't the points those hard threes score, but it's the easy threes those open up they capitalize on later. And so when good teams stay disciplined, like we were talking about earlier, when good teams stay disciplined and can force them off the three-point line and prevent those easy threes, those hard threes don't matter as much, and they start to lose, like, sort of organization and faith in themselves. And then in certain seasons, honestly, that wouldn't be as huge of a problem because they wouldn't be running into these kind of defenses. But then you look at who they had to get through in the West, and there's the Jazz can pull this off, the Warriors can pull this off, the Spurs can pull this off. That might be it in the West as far as teams that can play that kind of defense.
Well, but here's the thing, though, right? I think that the way that the Bucks played the Rockets tonight was actually, in a real crucial way, different from the way that the Jazz would have played it, because they were pretty much allowing the pick and roll to be good in a certain way. It's like James Harden had, you know, was I think one rebound away from a triple-double. He had nearly 30 points. But the thing is, they were letting James Harden have the pick and roll. And in games like that, you know, they don't have, like, Miles Plumlee.
Mason Marshall, Mitchell.
Yeah, it's some Plumlee. Like,
Margarine.
And Greg Monroe, too. You know, Greg Monroe's good. He's not an elite rim protector. And nights like that, you need James Harden to just take over and score 60 points. Because, like, that's what they were giving him. And they were committing to, okay, we're going to play this pick and roll straight up. Like, two on two, right? And if James Harden isn't going to make them pay for that, then everyone can stay on their man, and the whole principle of, like, okay, we're going to create a closeout and kick it out to the open man. If no open man manifests out of the pick and roll because James Harden isn't slaying everyone, then, like...
Right, and I think the Jazz would do that because of Gobert, basically.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, the Bucks did, like, put the cart before the horse, and James Harden accepted that. It's like they were saying,
but that's what the Warriors did too, and it worked. Like, they're not the first team that's played this defense against the Rockets and had the Rockets offense sort of not fall apart, but to be diminished in effectiveness in a notable way.
Well, you know, but I guess the point that I'm making in differentiating the way that the Jazz played it and the way that the Rockets or the Bucks and the Warriors played it is that they sort of intrinsically have this threat that if they can get either Giannis or Kevin Durant involved in that pick and roll action, that if they're one of those two players, then like you can play it straight up. Whereas, and they would be, you know, marginally covering the wing, right? Like they would be, Giannis would be contesting Harden's shot if they play it absolutely straight up. But Gobert was contesting all of Russell Westbrook's shots.
Right, but like if the Jazz played straight up in that way, they could have Hood on Harden.
And that wouldn't work.
Hill on Harden.
That would work.
But that's the thing, is that like it does need to work. But it does just need to slow down a little, right? Like it, James Harden can score 45, 50 points even. And if you're holding the 3-point line and forcing them to take bad shots, you can still beat the Rockets. And like the Jazz could do that, the Spurs could do that, the Warriors we've seen do that. Like that's the teams are trying to figure out a pretty good counter that won't always work, and then the vast majority of teams don't have the personnel to do it.
Right.
Answer to the Rockets, but like the teams the Rockets have to deal with in the playoffs, not a majority, but a good chunk do have the personnel to pull that off.
What is it like? There's 100 ways to skin a cat or something like that. It's like
there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Is okay, yeah. Well, that's awful. First of all,
well, you thought there were 100 ways, so think about that and what that says about you.
So there's. I guess what I'm saying is like, you know, they are covering the pick and roll action in totally different ways. But the bottom line is that teams like, you're right, there's like 3-4 teams that can even say, that can even like have operate under the pretension that they could cover a straight up James Harden pick and roll.
Well, it's more than that too, right? It's because there's so many parts of it that have to work for this defense to be viable, right? Like, you have to be able to cover the pick and roll, like, have a good check on the roll man, have a, like, as good as a check if you're going to get on Harden, have all the outside defenders stay disciplined to their man, have them stay focused on cuts, have them not walk to the ball for even like a second, otherwise Harden will find that dude who gets open. Like, it takes a ton of parts, right, from all five players playing on a string and playing at a high level.
Well, but I'm saying like,
and
they're not playing it on a string. Like, that's the whole point, is that they're playing it straight up.
But they're playing, well, they're playing on a string on the outside, though, in a certain type of way. Like,
the only person who's playing on any vague type of, it's like the way of that Vogel always played pick and rolls, right? It's the Vogel defense. It's, okay, we're going to beat you with Hibbert and Hill, and the only person who's even sort of going to leave their man is Paul George, right?
Right, but that's the thing, is it's not just that. It's that if, I guess what I mean by on a string is that, like, no one's ever left unguarded in the way of, like, no one leaves their man, or if they do, it's a straight switch. Right? Like, that's the key to this defense, is that, like...
And I guess what I'm saying is, like, I thought tonight... I don't think that the Bucks on a... Maybe that's different, though, just because Giannis is such a... Oh, my God. But, okay, what I was going to say, right, is, like, I don't think the Bucks... I don't think that the Bucks are one of those teams who can really truly force James Harden into a position where he can't exploit something and force a closeout or just beat any two defenders, right? You know, I think that Rudy Gobert and George Hill will do that, right? They're the only team that I think has truly beaten James Harden in a pick and roll situation.
But that's the whole point. See, I feel like you're missing the boat of why this defense is significant.
No, I feel like
the point isn't whether or not they can beat James. The whole point of the defense is to take the question of can you beat James Harden in a pick and roll situation and make that a non-factor. Right? That's the entire purpose of playing defense this way. Is by cutting off his options beyond just the pick and roll and staying disciplined on those, then you force him to have to win the pick-and-roll battle every single time, which is just never going to happen because of math.
Well, no, but, like, that is what the Suns did, right? That is what the Rockets do. They run this pick-and-roll over and over.
Okay, but that's not what the Suns did, and that's not what the Rockets do. They run it over and over and over because they can find people on the outside because people fall in to cover the pick and roll. But when you just play it straight up and you wing defender or exterior defenders stay
right
on their men, the pick and roll, whether or not he wins the pick and roll battle becomes irrelevant because his alternatives aren't there. So he has to do it. So all that, you're basically playing a numbers game at that point, a numbers game that Harden will sometimes win because he's incredible. But that,
well, he's the best, he's the most efficient scorer as the ball handler in a pick and roll ever.
Yeah, sure. Like,
and I'm saying, I guess what I'm saying, right? And like, I think that Giannis throws this into question a little bit, and like, this is an interesting discussion. So we can move on. It looks like we're not going to talk about the entire league, but like, whatever. We've been, this is good discussion. You know, it's informative. Whatever. So what I was going to say, right, is I'm sitting over here thinking, you know, this is the Milwaukee Bucks. Like, James, come on, man. Like, you should be able to beat any two defenders. There shouldn't be two defenders that the Bucks can put together who can deal with you. But the thing is, does Giannis just throw that all into question?
Well, I think
in a certain way it does.
I think so. Well, okay. So I'm not going to think that, yeah, I think that the Bucks, personnel-wise, and to be honest, like, discipline-wise, probably aren't at the level of a Spurs, Warriors, Jazz, as far as their ability to do what I was talking about and take away his non-pick and roll options. But then, yeah, Giannis comes that up because it's like Giannis makes that pick and roll harder and makes him force, like, does the opposite almost, and forces him away from the pick and roll towards those options, which they're trying their hardest to cover up, and that's good enough, or at least was good enough tonight.
The Bucks?
Yeah. Like, they're forcing him to take alternative moves because Giannis does, like, swallow people whole.
Yeah.
And they have a couple of defenders who can do that. And so,
well, who else?
Brogdon.
No way.
Brogdon's
no
very good.
Look, way.
He's not going to stop James Harden every single time, but he is a good enough defender to slow him down a little bit. Like, it happened tonight.
This is the critical difference, right? If you're telling me that, you know, the Bucks are going to accept on any given possession a straight up, you know, Brogdon, Plumlee pick and roll defense without collapsing on that, then like the Rockets would just run that over and over and kill them over and over until they're forced to change their strategy, unless they don't, right? And that's ultimately up to James Harden. D'Antoni, his whole offensive principle is like, I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm going to implement a system, and you're going to run it and ultimately make the decision. And James Harden, I think, was deciding not to just kill them. And I guess what I'm saying is, I'm absolutely unwilling to accept the idea that Brogdon was the one who was stopping James Harden.
No, you're missing the forest of trees because I said Brogdon. Slow down. Giannis and other defenders got in there as well, but that's the point, right? Is that like,
no, but it had to have been just Giannis,
no,
right?
That's the whole thing, is that Giannis obviously did the majority of the work and was the majority of the reason why they weren't trying to jam the pick and roll down their throats on every possession. And when they did that, it didn't go as well as they wanted to. But the fact that other people get in there and at least slow him down and force him to consider other options allowed them to get set in ways that were at least somewhat, like, you know, semi-viable defensive options, right? Like, obviously, Giannis is the reason why they could make up for some of their, you know, Greg Monroe-ness and other sort of, like, defensive gap areas. But their ability to put mostly Brogdon, but other sort of long limb dudes in there, like, in the same way that we talked about before, like, Pachulia functions in a pick and roll when you're playing the Warriors to just create space people have to go around, which allows the defense to adjust. Like, Brogdon was doing some of that. Other players were doing some of that. And that's not the reason, because if you're going to isolate the reason, it's obviously Giannis. But what made the Bucks extra difficult is that they couldn't just get Giannis away from Harden and have a nobody there.
Well, and also,
it was a somebody to deal with, even if it was a much easier person to deal with than Giannis.
Well, I feel like it's worth differentiating at this point that in the fourth quarter, they didn't even get to run a pick and roll because they were just throwing away the ball over and over. Like, Jason Terry was the most important defender because he was just picking everything off and they were being sloppy and they were just giving everything away. And I feel like I guess I just feel... You know, maybe, like, James Harden ultimately did beat them. He had 12 assists and 28 points. But the Bucks' offense was just running on hyperdrive. I mean, it was like 130 to 130, something like that.
I mean, Giannis and Jabari had... were fuego. Brogdon had an all right game as well.
I guess...
and they were able to hang with them. Like, it was a run-and-gun game, but, like, the Bucks runned and gunned better.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, the Rockets kept up with them, you know, well, like, literally, they were playing catch-up right up until the 10-minute mark in the fourth quarter. When there were 10 minutes left, the Rockets took the lead for a brief second before everything fell apart. And, you know, I just feel like, I wish that James Harden had just gone totally ham. And I feel like, you know, the fact that he didn't... either says something about Giannis or it says something about James. But, like, the reality is that it was, you know, sloppy passing from the Rockets in the fourth quarter that killed them. And then the other reality is that if the Bucks can match the Rockets' offense, then they just need to have a semi-tolerable defense to beat them because, like, you know, the Rockets' defense is sometimes really, really bad. And tonight... it was the defense that everyone was worried that they were going to have, right?
So against the Warriors playing this like very aggressive 3-point line based defense, and against the Bucks being the same thing. Well, against the Warriors, Harden went 0-for-5 from three. Tonight he went 2-for-4, but that's just not a lot of 3-point shooting from him. And I think that sort of speaks to sort of what I'm talking about with this like hyper aggressive like 3-point line stuff, just keeping him from like James Harden. Is gonna kill you in one way or another, probably most likely two ways per game, because he's got a lot of ways to do it. But if you can limit the ways in which he kills you to two-pointers and assists on two-pointers, I feel like you're gonna be in a pretty good spot just given the sort of porousness of the Rockets' defense. I guess is sort of what I'm saying with vis-a-vis like this defensive strategy.
Well, and, you know, I think one particularly interesting way that the Rockets' defense was... porous, you know, was Patrick Beverley was the second most negative person in the lineup besides Corey Brewer. Because, like, Patrick Beverley as a defender is super duper valuable if he's guarding someone else who's somewhere near 6'1". But the Bucks, at any given time, like, the shortest player is 6'5". So if your best, you know, perimeter defender is Patrick Beverley, if you put Patrick Beverley on Giannis, you're going to get slaughtered, right?
Napa
know-how.
The Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
And yeah. So, like, it's a pretty... well, in that regard, it's a really bad matchup.
Yeah, well, there are a couple fundamental matchup problems in this game. Like, there's just no... I mean, to be fair, there's not a lot of folks who can guard Giannis and, to a lesser extent, Jabari. And there are certainly none of them on the Rockets.
Well, Ariza, sort of.
I mean, but...
Ariza gets pretty close. I mean, like, in regards to compared to everyone else in the league. Like, no one can guard
Giannis. He's the Rockets' best option against either of those two dudes. The problem is that he can only guard one of them at a time, and also he's not that good at guarding them. Not that he's bad, but he's just, you know, he's not going to be a major stopper for either of those guys. And so, when you think about just, like, what the Rockets could have done defensively, there's not a lot of options. And then so on offense, it was just like they're going to have to be shooting a lot of threes, and then the threes were denied, and it's just like a lot of matchup stuff in this game just, like, was predisposed anti-Rockets.
Well, and, you know, I mean, to be fair, the Bucks shouldn't have been able to match the offensive pace that the Warriors were going at. I mean, not the Warriors, the Rockets were going at, but they did, and they won.
Yeah. For sure. So what other games need we talk about?
Jazz Thunder.
Do we want to talk about anything else before we get to the last game of the night, though?
What was the last game of the night? The Heat
that won? Well, no, that was the...
the Jazz Thunder.
Do you want to talk about the fact that Dion Waiters did?
Dion Waiters did the Warriors very dirty. We've already talked about it, but he hit. I mean, that game was very silly, but Dion Waiters went for 33 and then hit a game-winning three, almost hit the buzzer in Klay Thompson's face, and then Steve Kerr's heart exploded.
And it went 33 for the second night in a row. Yeah. Or it was either the second night or the second game.
Second game.
I hope it was the second night.
It was. He put 33 on the Grizzlies in the game before.
If he puts 33 down for the next 20 games, he'll get 666. The mark of...
Actually, he only needs to get put 18 down, right? 18 more.
Yeah, but, like, I meant 20 total.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the Knicks, real quick, the Knicks beat the Pacers with some real Carmelo Anthony business in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Carmelo clutch.
Yeah, know? Some clutch Melo ball, which, to be fair, is sort of your argument for the Warriors, that at a certain point, when you have players who can generate their own shots like that, it's sort of the safest option.
Listen to the New York Knicks podcast. Their last episode, I think, was really, really great. It had me on it.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's all I want to say about other games. So let's get to this last guy.
So Jazz Thunder was like the opposite of the offensive scoring fest. Well, it was certainly not the opposite in terms of like just ball flying everywhere that the Rockets and Bucks were like. You know, with the Rockets, there were, like, so many loose possessions, and, like, it's like, oh, man, where's the basketball going? There were so many moments that, like that Steven Adams tip-out to Andre Roberson, and then it's, like, those two Russell Westbrook free throws. It was just, like, grimy, you know?
Yeah, well, it was especially weird, because the first half was, was very good offensively. Like, both teams were, like, capitalizing on shots, and getting opportunities and
but playing. But what it is like the defense got increasingly physical. Whoa. It got increasingly physical.
Yeah, the defense got ratcheted up from quarter to quarter. For sure. Until by the end, it was like basically just two dudes hitting each other with sticks.
They really, it was super duper physical. And I mean, on the very last shot of the game, I sort of, you know, made a remark about this, that the Steven Adams pick and the high pick that Steven Adams hit or set for Russell Westbrook when he hit the game when he shots and with, you know, 1.8 seconds left on the clock or whatever, it was most likely a moving pick. You don't call that, though, especially in a game where, like, Russell Westbrook's getting clocked in the face literally and not getting calls for that. I mean, yeah, it was just punching and biting and nipple pinching and...
The rest let them play in a pretty huge way. And then Russ took advantage and hit the go-ahead jumper with 1.4 left and ended up with, like, what, like 38, 10, and 10 and another triple-double?
Russ was that boy.
Oh, shit, what up?
No, you can't swear.
I said, oh, shit, what up?
Oh, you said ship?
Yeah. Roll it back. Ahoy, mateys. it was a crazy game. And, well, it also had, like, my favorite moment of the season so far, which was Russ trying to dunk Rudy Gobert through the Earth's crust and out the other side, only to be foiled by the rim. Like, he got over Gobert and got in position and just hammered off the front of the rim. And if he had put that dunk down, we would just have to... The Thunder win the championship.
France would have surrendered.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we would just have to, like... You just have to give them the title then.
Yeah.
And it's over. Because that would have been the best dunk I've seen in ages. Part of me is still dealing with the fact that it didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
But man, he was trying to put that dude in the ground.
Yeah, but like that's every game for Russell Westbrook, though.
I know, but it's like...
But Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, exactly. It's like lots of players trying to dunk on lots of players all the time, but like... No one's really trying to dunk on Rudy Gobert.
Right.
Except Russell Westbrook is like, I don't care about Rudy Gobert. I'm going to destroy his body.
Here's the thing, right? Like, there was a point in the game where Russell Westbrook was 7-20. But he was getting out in transition and beating Gobert to the rim because, I'm not sure if you knew this, Lux, but Russell Westbrook is very fast, and he's much faster than Rudy Gobert.
He's also much faster than a cheetah.
Yeah.
Than a single cheetah that I know.
So he was getting tons of points in the fast break. And in the half court, one of the most astounding things about, you know, it's kind of similar to, you remember everyone was like, Kevin Durant's holding Russell back and Russell is holding Kevin Durant back. Like, now all of a sudden, Kevin Durant is an elite defender, and now all of a sudden, Russell Westbrook is actually hitting pull-up threes, and he's actually hitting pull-up mid-rangers. Because, like, that's why I thought that this offense wouldn't work, because, I mean, you go up against defenders like Rudy Gobert, and it's like, oh, crap, I'm not going to try to make this layup unless I know for certain that I'm going to get fouled. And I know he drew, I think, at least 12 fouls. But, you know, I'm not going to try to, like, lay it up over Rudy Gobert because he's just going to block me. So I'm going to pull up for a mid-range jump shot. And if this was any other year, Russell Westbrook would just whiff on those. But this year, he makes them.
Yeah, I mean, there's that, which is probably more important. And then there's also the fact that, like, Russ isn't as worried about getting blocked as I think we all expect him to be during this. Like, he is going straight at dudes like Rudy Gobert and Hassan Whiteside and the other, like, big intimidating shot blockers. Like, obviously, like...
I mean, I saw a lot this game, Russell Westbrook not go all the way into the paint.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, they're tied. Like, he displayed some judgment, but he definitely was not...
It's not because I think he's scared. I think it's because he wants to win, and if you get blocked, you lose.
Yeah, but he didn't back down nearly so much as you might have expected. Like, he went for it on almost many occasions he didn't go for it. I mean, that's not exactly true. Like, the match doesn't hold up, but...
I think he went for it when he thought that he could get it. I guess what I mean is, like, in a way that he maybe normally would not, he wasn't physically forcing the issue.
No, he definitely wasn't. He played a very sort of... not necessarily cerebral, but at least, like, calculated a game.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say cerebral, but he's more skilled. I mean, I mean, he shot, like, 29% from three, but he's taking harder threes, more threes, and hitting, like, 34, 35%, which is what everyone always said he needed to be able to do, to be a, to for those three-pointers to make sense, right? You know, if you can hit 34, 35%, then, like, you can take those shots. And, you know, I think the fact that he's hitting those shots, too, is actually partially why he's been so amazing this year, because people are closing out on him now.
I mean, when you... Right, I mean, it's sort of empirically proven that when you get close to Russell Westbrook gets past you. Because he's just so fast and so strong and so good at turning.
He doesn't have cartilage in his knees.
That's true, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And yet.
Yeah.
And yet
it's he's... It's like bone on bone.
And yet he does these, like, 90-degree turns as though they are the easiest thing anyone's ever tried.
It's like Derrick Rose, except for, like, he doesn't care.
Yeah, it's ludicrous what Russell Westbrook does, but he... I mean, he basically carried this team to this victory. Like,
he really did, yeah.
Their interior guys were just getting outclassed by the Jazz. Gordon Hayward was playing great.
Captain America.
Yeah, he was just going Steve Rogers on everybody. Russell Westbrook was just like, I don't care. Like, I'm going to score almost... close to or more than 40% of my team's points, and that'll be enough that, like, the rest of them will chip in enough that we'll win this game.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the Thunder methodology this year. But it's working against teams that are, like, pretty good. Like, the Jazz are very good.
Yeah.
I mean, this
was a... I think the Bucks went over the Rockets, especially... I think they were on a 5-win slide. They were... Yeah, they've been I think losing. They're still ninth in the East.
Yeah, which they're still game back of the Knicks, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that that's going to... I think they'll make the playoffs. But, you know, I think it was a very big deal that they won tonight. And, you know, I think it was a huge deal that Russell Westbrook pulled one over on the Jazz, who were on a winning streak. You know, when we came into tonight, when we were, you know, walking through the door into my apartment, what we were talking about as we walked in was, well, I think if... either Harden or Russell Westbrook doesn't differentiate themselves, then LeBron might sneak in and win. But the thing is, wins like tonight is like what Russell Westbrook is the way that Russell Westbrook solidifies his case. And losses like tonight is how James Harden loses it.
Yeah, I agree with both. I mean, I think that if Russ averages a triple-double and the Thunder win 50 games, there's no way he doesn't win the MVP. I think that's crazy. Just because, like, that roster has no business winning 50 games.
Yeah.
Someone averaging a triple-double. Like, we've talked about... It's...
Yeah, but I mean, if James Harden gets like 13 assists and 30 points and the Rockets get 60 wins, I mean...
I still don't think so. It's just like, they're... When you talk about most valuable player, there's like a million ways to frame it and stuff, but Russell Westbrook is literally like... Like, you know those... You know, like, the World's Strongest Man competition? Where, like, dudes named, like, Bjorn Mjørgensen, like wrap a rope around their waist and latch it to a bus and, like, walk up a hill?
Yeah.
Like, that's what Westbrook is doing. Like, it's... I understand that, like, Harden is doing some insane business. And, like, he obviously is, and it's incredible. But what Russ is doing night in and night out is on some other-ish.
Yeah, like, but, I mean, the... I think people underrate the degree to which the... Well, I mean, God. I mean, first of all, Billy Donovan is a very, very good coach.
Yes.
Because, like, I can tell you how the Rockets fit together really well around Russell Westbrook. But at the start of the season, I was so far away from that.
Wait, yeah, what? You said the Rockets. But.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. How the Thunder fit around Russell Westbrook. There's a strategy. There's a certain degree of cohesion. They have a game plan. There's a reason Russell Westbrook averages a triple-double. They're intentionally doing that because it works, and they have a whole system, and I had no idea how they were going to figure it out, and yet they did it. So it's like, you know, yeah, I just feel like, you know, who has been more impressive? It's just like, you know, people docked last year. It's like, oh, well, you know, James Harden doesn't have the talent on his team and they didn't have enough wins, so, or 2 years ago rather, like, it's like, well, the Rockets weren't good enough. It's like, we can't give James Harden the MVP, we have to give it to Steph Curry. And then when the tables are turned, it's like, oh, well, now he has too much talent. Everyone thought, like, that right. The Eric well, Gordon and Ryan Anderson signings were going to be crap.
I mean, I think that those are bad arguments, you know, not that you're making bad arguments, but that, like, when people make these arguments about, like, relative talent levels on a team vis-a-vis the MVP, they're not the best arguments.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
isn't Kevin Durant, like, Kevin Durant isn't who I would vote for MVP, but, like, I mean, he's the MVP, right? Like,
well, no, Russell Westbrook is
the MVP. He's the best defensive player and offensive player on the best team in the league.
Like, yeah, no, I mean, there are cases to be made, but like I said, I think that... at least for me, my MVP rubric is like, when I close my eyes and imagine this team without XYZ player, like, what's it like? The Rockets
would be atrocious without James Harden.
Yeah, they'd be bad, but they wouldn't be as bad as the Thunder without Russell Westbrook.
I don't know. I think Oladipo can, you know, figure it out.
I think that we saw what it's like when Oladipo was lead guard in a team, and it was like a Magic team that won like 25 games.
Well, yeah, and I think that the Rockets would win like 25 games.
I think the Rockets would be better than that.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's opponents on Man vs. Train. At the crossing, we have Rick, a 175-pound frustrated man who's running late for work. And on the tracks, we have Bull, a million-pound freight train that takes a mile to stop. Let's see who comes out on top.
You can't beat a train, so don't try. Stop. Trains can't. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
That's actually adds a degree of nuance to the argument that I probably should have said before, is that you have to assume they're replaced by somebody, right? In order to replace James Harden, obviously can't do what James Harden is doing, but could facilitate that offense to do stuff. But like you're saying, the insane degree of, like, pieces that don't fit meshing together around Russell Westbrook's...
But, like, they do fit. That's what I'm saying.
But they fit with Russell Westbrook. They don't fit in general. Like, a different point guard, those pieces don't work.
Well, but, like, a different player than James Harden, the same thing is true.
I don't think that's true. I think that the pieces in Houston are way more coherent outside of James Harden than the pieces in OKC outside of Westbrook. But James Harden obviously is integral to them running it close to full capacity, which is what they're doing, which is incredible. But, like... There's like a clear...
You need someone who's able to, like... You don't just get open from three. You need someone who can average 14 assists a game. It's like saying, what if Steve Nash...
No, see, that's that I don't buy. I don't buy that you need someone who averages 14 assists a game. I think they could win... I think this Rockets team could win 35, 40 games with Jordan Clarkson as their point guard.
Well, that's why I have a basketball network and you don't. Because I know, like, that's ridiculous.
I don't think that's ridiculous.
How many wins do you think they could get with Jordan Clarkson?
Like 35 or 40.
I don't need this right now.
Just, like, just think about it. Like, they have...
You're saying they would be a playoff team. 40 wins will get you into the playoffs in the West.
I think they would at least be competitive for the 8th slot with
Jordan Clarkson. You are high.
Not today. And no, I don't think that that's outrageous a presumption. Like,
that is outrageous.
No, because think of what other teams that have had this kind of lack of talent with Mike D'Antoni running the Mike D'Antoni system have done.
You're insane.
Talk about something.
I want to go home.
You are home.
Well, I mean, like, what do we have to talk about anymore? Because this is ludicrous.
Teams running the system can achieve 30-ish wins without having max talent at that position.
We didn't say 30-ish. You said 35-40.
That team went 36-30.
How many wins do you think that the Thunder are going to get?
With Jordan Clarkson?
No.
This year?
This year.
They're probably going to be between 45-50.
Okay, so 45-50. All right, you take Russell Westbrook away. What do they get?
I don't know, probably 25-30.
Okay, so that's the same amount of wins. Because the Rockets are going to get 60 wins.
Are they, though?
Yeah, I mean, on track to get, like, 60 wins.
All right. That's true. Yeah, they're roughly on pace for 60 wins. I think they're a little bit short, but yeah, they're close enough. Yeah, I mean, I guess what I mean is that Harden takes a team that could be garbage, but could be, like, and makes them very, very good. Russell Westbrook takes a team that, like, defo would be garbage and makes them pretty good. And to me, that's, like, a more impressive and telling thing as far as MVP candidacies go, especially like within the framework of the narrative for Russell Westbrook is like so much more poignant than the James Harden narrative. Like, I agree that people have done James Harden pretty dirty on MVP votes in the past. Like, I think that 2 years ago he probably should have won the MVP.
If you're averaging like 13 assists and like 30 points a game, you're responsible for like 60 points of your team's offense.
That's one more assist and fewer points than Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, but like, you have a much better team. Like I don't know, man. Like, saying like, you know, that like there's no argument for James Harden.
I'm not saying that there's no argument. Now you're putting words in my mouth. My point is that there's a better argument for Russell Westbrook.
Yeah. There's no Jordan Clarkson, is there?
I mean, insert any replacement level point guard, the argument remains the same.
Yeah.
Like, Jordan Clarkson is just the one I picked because Jordan Clarkson is, like, to me,
replacement point guard. Exactly. Dude, the Lakers are, like, the worst team in the league, and he's not starting. Lou Williams and D'Angelo Russell are starting.
Okay, well,
Jordan Clarkson is kind of bad.
Okay, well, you know, replacement level point guard du jour, right, is the point. Jordan Clarkson's sort of irrelevant in this question.
Like, who?
I don't care. Just whoever the exact average point guard is.
Dennis Schroeder.
Sure, Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah, well, Dennis Schroeder could replace Russell Westbrook. No, he couldn't.
No, he couldn't.
Yeah.
That's crazy. No, the Jordan Clarkson was never the point. Jordan Clarkson was only a small component of the issue.
Yeah.
What was I think that Russell Westbrook, A, is a more compelling narrative case. B, I think, has had the more deserving season in a vacuum. And not by much. Like, I don't think that James Harden shouldn't be considered, because he's like, clearly it's like, oh, like, 1A, 1B. Situation, but I think there's decided 1A and decided 1B.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I think that I'm probably just tired and cranky, and I thought you were making a different point than you were. And it was very upsetting to me.
Yeah, you were very upset.
It's really upset. Russell Westbrook, first of all, like, you know, on the point of narrative thing, I agree with you, but I don't think it's as big of a gap as, I mean, like, because James Harden has the whole, like, redemption story, turning everything around, like, you know, gather and rally the troops. I mean, he lost Dwight Howard, right? I mean, like, he, I know. I hate
Dwayne. Come on, dude. I mean, come on, dude.
You know, they had like a totally dysfunctional thing, like, and he turned everything around, and, you know, he had their system. Look, the thing is, like, you know, what the, you know, honestly, like, one of the two coaches should win Coach of the Year, and then one of the two players, Russell Westbrook or James Harden, should win MVP. You know, and like, it's hard to say, because, like, Billy Donovan has created a system that is perfectly tailored for Russell Westbrook and the roster. So is D'Antoni. And it's interesting in how, like, different they are, but it is similar insofar as they're both, like, everything stops if they're not there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's the gist of it. I just think that, like, Russ's business...
Russell, I mean, LeBron James, though. He had the chase down block.
He did. I think Russell's business is a little bit is cooler. And I just think, like, yeah, like, I think the Harden narrative is definitely there and interesting. But just, like, the Russ narrative that is, like, me and my best bro, Kevin Durant, are conquering the NBA. Oh, I'm left all alone and everyone doubts me. Now I'm going to have to triple-double and eat everyone's heart.
Yeah, but James Harden was, like, a castaway from the Thunder.
Yeah, well...
It's like, you'll never be crap, James.
Yeah, you'll never amount to anything, James.
We'd rather have Kevin Martin.
Yeah, oh boy. Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's a good narrative there. I just think that, like, the Westbrook-Durant narrative is just clearly the heart of the season-long narrative right now.
I guess I just mean that, like, you know, I feel like people have this, like, image of Russell Westbrook that is so different because he just looks so pissed off all the time. Like, you know, I don't know, man. I think that, like, Tim Duncan sort of got a raw deal for similar reasons. Like, Tim Duncan is, you could make an argument that he is a top three defender of all time, and, like, he never won Defensive Player of the Year. Yeah. And I just think that, like, you know, how competitive you are isn't dictated by how angry you are. And, I mean, like, James Harden is, like, cool and calm and collected, and he also is not as, you know, flashy as Russell Westbrook is, but, I mean, in certain ways, you would argue that James Harden is actually more competitive because James Harden, like, doesn't do things that jeopardizes his team's success, like taking pull-up three-pointers that he shouldn't be taking, except for this season when everything is magically going in. You know, but, like, in the past, Russell Westbrook has been kind of, like, bad in the clutch, right? And it's been like, put the team on his back. But, like, you know, it's like, you know, you can say, oh man, Kobe, he's got the heart of a lion. Like, he, like, drove that team into the ground, right? Like, is he a better competitor than Tim Duncan?
Yeah, well, I don't think there's an argument, or at least I'm not going to make the argument that either one of them is a more competitive or better competitor than the other.
But I just feel like there's this, like, subconscious bias, right?
I think that if you're going to average a triple-double and be, like, the peak usage rate guy on a team that has no business even being in the playoff discussion and let alone touching 50 wins, then, like, you should win the MVP because that's insane.
Yeah. Yep.
That.
But the Rockets lost Dwight Howard.
Remember earlier when Dwight was on the TV and you just turned off all the TVs?
Well, I mean, like, the TV was... It was doing the thing where everything was turning off.
Yeah, all right. Anyways, this is an unguarded shooting. I'm Lux, and you can find me on Twitter at MLSurfboard.
And you can find me, I'm also Lux, at MLSurfboard. follow me, I'm Chris Axman. You know me. You can find me at Almighty Ballin. But more importantly, you can find everyone on my podcast network at almightyballer.com and on blogtalkradio.com/ABPN. I need a nap.
We're going to go take a quick vacation to Waiters Island.
I'm upset right now.
For reasons that remain unclear.
Yeah, man. I seriously just think I'm really cranky.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, then take me home and I'll go to bed. And then you can go to bed.
I had a long day working on the network, and that's why it's so fabulous, and you should check it out.
Yeah. I'm getting yelled at for your benefit, strangers who are listening to the podcast.
I'm sorry, Mike.
It's okay. I understand.
Can we be friends again? It's okay. Co-hosts for life. We should have friendship bracelets.
Okay, we should go home.
All right, yeah. All right, good night, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Later, networkies.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.